This mass of vegetables contains the same amount of insulin-promoting carbohydrate as is 2 ounces of pasta. No one in their right mind is going to eat that amount of vegetables, but it does illustrate the differences in insulin-promoting carbohydrate densities of various food sources. While most people will only choose one protein source per meal, most people will mix and match carbohydrates. Just make sure those carbohydrates don't exceed 4 blocks. As an example, you could have 1/4 cup of cooked pasta, 2 cups of steamed vegetables, and 1/2 cup of grapes. That's 4 carbohydrate blocks. You are simply using blocks to construct the appropriate amount of insulin-promoting carbohydrate to match the amount of low-fat protein to optimize your hormonal carb rater. If you are thinking hormonally, you now know it takes fat to burn fat. So at every meal, you want to add some extra fat. We want to keep the saturated fat as low as possible on the zone diet. That's why high-fat protein choices like bacon don't make sense. By using low-fat protein choices, it is now possible to add back monounsaturated fat of your choosing to optimize your hormonal carb rater. Let's go back and construct balanced meals for a person who needs 4 blocks. Let's try 4 ounces of skinless chicken. That's 4 blocks of protein. 2 ounces of pasta, 4 blocks of carbohydrate, and 4 macadamia nuts, 4 fat blocks. Hormonally, it's okay, but your carbohydrate choice isn't too high in vitamins or minerals, and there's not much of it on your plate. But if you like pasta that much, then that is all you can have at that meal with that amount of protein. What if we substitute 1/2 a piece of fruit for 1/2 of the pasta? It's still 4 carbohydrate blocks, but now represents a better source of vitamins. We're getting there. What if you replaced the remaining pasta with 2 cups of steamed vegetables, and in place of the 4 macadamia nuts, you add 12 olives to your meal for monounsaturated fat? A pretty hearty meal for anyone, yet less than 400 calories, assuming you eat all the vegetables. And isn't this why your grandmother told you to eat all your vegetables before you left the table? If your meal is balanced every time you eat, then you are getting enough insulin-promoting carbohydrate with each meal to balance off the protein. What if you are a vegetarian? Simply substitute 12 ounces of firm tofu for the 4 ounces of chicken breast, and do a stir-fry with the vegetables, layered with 12 split olives. Then have 1/2 the fruit plate on the side as dessert. It's easy. Write down the number of protein blocks you plan to eat at your meal. Then start planning your carbohydrate content of the meal. If you want a hearty salad with a meal, then you know that it will be equal to 1 carbohydrate block. If you want some alcohol with that meal, then mark down the number of drinks you plan to consume. If you want dessert with that meal, then write down the number of carbohydrate blocks it will contain. Add up all these carbohydrate blocks from the side sources of carbohydrates, salad, alcohol, and dessert, and subtract them from the protein blocks. What you have left is the number of carbohydrates remaining for you in your main course. Obviously, if you plan to drink a lot of wine and eat a dessert, there may not be many, if any, carbohydrate blocks left for the main course. But at least you have complete control of how you want to structure a meal. Try to make all of your protein choices low in fat. This will supply adequate levels of essential fatty acids to your body while reducing your total intake of saturated fat. Make sure most of your carbohydrates come from favorable, low glycemic, and low density carbohydrates like fruits and vegetables. Finally, when you add fat blocks, make sure they are primarily monounsaturated fat. Don't get bogged down with attaining absolute precision when you're starting out. Simply ask yourself how you feel for the next 4 to 6 hours after a meal. If you have good mental focus and have no hunger, then you are in the zone. How you feel tells you whether or not that meal was a hormonal winner. If it was, put it into your hormonal winning cookbook that you can go back to over and over again for the same hormonal benefits. Here's a radical thought. No two people are the same. At least this appears to be a radical thought in certain nutritional circles. The zone diet is based upon an individual's needs, their likes, and taste. More importantly, the Zone diet is based on mathematics, even if it is simple math using blocks, so it can be adjusted to a particular individual's genetics. I say genetics because not everybody is genetically the same, especially in the insulin response to a defined intake of carbohydrates. Those genetic lucky ones, about 25% of the population, who have a lower insulin response to carbohydrates have a greater slop factor. They can tolerate more carbohydrates in a meal than the average person before they move out of the zone. On the other hand, those individuals who have a very high insulin response to carbohydrates have to watch their carbohydrate intake like a hawk. These genetic variations to the insulin response caused by carbohydrates may be found when you look at various blood groups. For much of man's evolutionary time, he was not exposed to high-density carbohydrates such as grains. Since it takes about 10,000 to 20,000 years for even subtle genetic adaptations to take place in a population, it is not too surprising that individuals with the oldest blood groups are simply not genetically designed to handle high-density carbohydrates. Among the oldest blood groups is type O, which includes many native tribes such as Australian Aborigines, Native Hawaiians, and Native Americans. It also includes many of Northern European ancestry. Individuals with this blood group tend to be very insulin sensitive to carbohydrates, and a high carbohydrate diet, especially if it's rich in high gluten grains like wheat, which is used to make bread and pasta, tends to be a hormonal disaster for them. Blood groups A, B, and B represent more recent genetic variations, and therefore these individuals may have a slightly diminished insulin reaction to carbohydrates. But they are not out of the woods by a long shot if they continue to consume excessive levels of carbohydrates. Finally, individuals with type A blood may represent the genetic lucky ones who can tolerate larger amounts of carbohydrates without severe overproduction of insulin. Maybe 20,000 years from now, everyone will be genetically lucky, but not yet. So how do you begin to adjust your hormonal carburetor? First, by knowing when it's in tune. If you've eaten a hormonally correct meal, you won't be hungry for the next 4 to 6 hours because you will be maintaining blood sugar levels. For the same biochemical reason, you'll have very sharp mental focus. And here's the best part. You're simultaneously tapping into your stored body fat as a virtually unlimited calorie source. If your last meal puts you clearly in the zone, then mark the exact proportions of that meal in a mental diary because you can always come back to that meal in the exact same proportions again to achieve the same hormonal effect. It's a hormonal winner and one to enshrine in your personal zone cookbook. Great, but what happens when your hormonal carburetor is out of tune? The first warning sign is that you get hungry before the end of that 4 to 6 hour time period. But that symptom alone will not tell you if you produced too much or not enough insulin in your last meal, because in either case, you'll get hungry within 2 to 3 hours after the meal. Why is that? Well, if you're producing too much insulin, then blood sugar levels will be driven down and your mental alertness drops. However, if your insulin levels are too low, then there is not enough insulin crossing the blood-brain barrier. Sufficient levels of insulin are required to interact with the hypothalamus to prevent the synthesis of neuropeptide Y, probably the most potent stimulator of appetite. And here's the irony. Although the brain is getting more than adequate levels of blood sugar and thus maintaining excellent mental acuity, you have a growing hunger due to the increase in neuropeptide Y levels in the brain. So now you can play food detective in order to retune your carburetor. If you eat a meal and feel hungry and loopy within 2 to 3 hours, if not sooner, then that meal contained too many carbohydrates relative to the amount of protein. Make a mental note of the number of carbohydrate blocks that you ate, and the next time you had the same meal, maintain the same level of protein blocks, but decrease the number of carbohydrate blocks by one. Correspondingly, if you're hungry within 2 to 3 hours but maintain a good mental acuity, you have pushed insulin levels too low. Make a mental note of the number of carbohydrate blocks that you ate, and the next time you eat the same meal, maintain the same level of protein blocks, but increase the amount of carbohydrate blocks by one. Another approach to this fine-tuning process is to treat it as a game. People love to play games because they have defined rules for winning, losing, and playing. The zone game is no different. It's a great game to play because the payoff occurs within the next 4 to 6 hours, and then it's time to play the game again. The goal of the game? Spend more time in the zone than out of it. Unlike most games, the zone game is a continuum. No matter what involvement level you play the game, you're going to get some benefits. The more the rules you follow, the better the results. Of course, to play the game well, you must begin to do some hormonal thinking, and therefore take dietary responsibility in your own hands. But that's easy, because on the zone diet, you're winning all along the way. At the first level of the zone game, I call these what your grandmother told you rules, such as drink at least 64 ounces of water per day, eat more fruits and vegetables and less pasta, breads, grains, and starches during the day, eat more frequent meals with fewer calories, eat small amounts of low-fat protein at every meal. The payoff? Now you'll stop gaining excess body fat. At level 2, I call these begin to pay attention rules. Determine how much protein you require per day and consume that amount. Use the eyeball method to control your ratio of protein to carbohydrate at every meal. Add some extra monounsaturated fat back to every meal. Drink 8 ounces of water 30 minutes before a meal. The payoff? You're going to start losing excess body fat. And at the highest level, or level 3, I call these, now I have to do some hormonal thinking rules. Make sure most of your carbohydrates come from fruits and vegetables, and use grains, starches, pasta, and breads as condiments. Try to keep grains, starches, pasta, and bread to no more than 25% of your total carbohydrate consumed at a meal. Never let more than 5 hours go by without eating a zone meal or snack. Always eat a zone breakfast within 1 hour of rising. Always have a small zone snack before you go to bed. Always have a small zone snack 30 minutes before you exercise. The payoff? You're in the zone and you have done everything possible to achieve super health. Once you know how to tune up your hormonal carburetor and decide which level of the zone game you want to play, then you have complete control of the quality of your life. The better the quality of life you want, the more you have to pay attention to what you eat. Although this may seem like a revelation to most people, it was pretty obvious to your grandmother. If you put all of the above into a simple graphical picture, what you get is a zone pyramid of eating. The base of the zone pyramid is water. Your body is 70% water, and you need lots of it every day to maintain adequate hydration, especially on a zone diet in which you are burning stored body fat instead of incoming carbohydrates for energy. The next step of the zone pyramid contains fruits and vegetables. The next rung up is low-fat protein. Notice I didn't say meat, just low-fat protein. This category includes tofu or soybean imitation meat products, as well as low-fat animal sources. The next rung of the zone pyramid is monounsaturated fat. This is hormonally neutral fat and will have no effect on insulin. And finally, at the top of the zone pyramid, to be used in moderation, are grains, starches, breads, and pasta. The zone diet doesn't forbid these items, it just treats them as condiments. If you think the rules to the zone game are still too hard to remember, then simply use your hand and your eye to constantly remind you how to play the zone game. First, look at the palm of your hand and follow these simple steps. Never eat any more low-fat protein than you can fit onto the palm of your hand. Let the volume of the low-fat protein you're going to eat determine the volume of carbohydrates you can eat at the same time. If you're eating unfavorable carbohydrates, grains, starches, pasta, bread, etc., then you can have the same volume portion as the low-fat protein you're eating. If you're eating favorable carbohydrates, fruits and vegetables, then you can eat double the volume of the low-fat protein portion. Now look at the fingers of your hand and follow these simple zone rules. Eat 5 times a day, divided into 3 meals and 2 snacks. Never let more than 5 hours go by without eating a zone meal or zone snack. Try not to eat more than 5 blocks of any macronutrient, protein, carbohydrate, or fat per meal. Make sure that the number of carbohydrate blocks on the fingers of one hand is balanced by the number of protein blocks on the other hand at every meal or snack. The zone game is simple. It's fun to play, and you get an immediate payoff if you win. It's like going to Las Vegas and playing the slot machines. Unlike Las Vegas, where you usually lose but have a good time, you try to win the zone game all the time and have a great time doing it. And that's why I want to give you even more helpful hints on how to play this game. Number one, identify your personal protein prescription. The foundation for preparing every zone meal and snack starts with the amount of protein that you decide to put on your plate. Be certain when your head hits the pillow that you have tried your best to consume the entire number of protein blocks that you require for the day. 2. Try having low-fat protein already prepared in your refrigerator. This can be in the form of tuna salad, sliced turkey breast, hard-boiled egg whites, low-fat cottage cheese, or a dip using firm or extra-firm tofu. It's always easy to find carbohydrates for meals or snacks, but a little advanced preparation will make sure you can always find some protein at the same time. 3. Regardless of your protein needs, never consume less than 8 protein blocks per day if you're an adult. 4. Map out your daily protein requirements based on the number of protein blocks you'll need as determined by your protein prescription. Plan your protein prescription based on your wake-up time. Remember, try to eat within 1 hour after waking. This starts the zone clock running. Now determine those time points throughout the day when it's necessary to refuel the body. Never let more than 5 hours go by without eating, whether you're hungry or not, in order to maintain and sustain yourself within the zone. 5. Use the food block guide in the insert as a valuable reference tool to reduce the task of meal planning to a simple, easy-to-follow program which allows you to create an infinite variety of zone meals and snacks based on the foods you'd like to eat. Remember, you only need to match the number of protein blocks you consume in any meal or snack with the same number of carbohydrate and fat blocks to get your hormonal carburetor going. 6. Whether or not you've entered the zone is ultimately not a question of percentages, totals, amounts, or glycemic index. It's solely based on your personal response to a meal. You don't have to be obsessive about constructing zone meals. Just pay very careful attention to how you respond to the meals you have. 7. After the first 2 or 3 days on the zone diet, if you sense you're not experiencing the benefits during any 4 to 6 hour interval, you're simply not in the zone. Remember, you haven't failed, nor has the zone diet failed. It's just your particular hormonal carburetor may need some fine-tuning. But the protein-to-carbohydrate ratio is usually not the blame. It's often the amount of fat that you're not adding back to the diet. Remember, dietary fat slows the entry rate of any carbohydrate into the bloodstream. Your success entering the zone is based on how well you control the entry rates of carbohydrates, both favorable or unfavorable, for the next 4 to 6 hour interval. View monounsaturated fats in your diet as your ally, not your enemy. If you're having difficulty maintaining the desired 4 to 6 hour response, then add more monounsaturated fat to your diet at every meal and snack. A block of fat has no effect on insulin levels. Remember, it's insulin, not dietary fat, that makes you fat. This small amount of extra fat will have no effect on your fat loss. 8. Do not forget the critical importance of your late afternoon and especially your late evening snacks. Most people make their mistake by not having a late afternoon snack, thus waiting too long before the evening meal. For example, if you had your afternoon snack at 4:30 and your evening meal is scheduled for 6:30 but is delayed until 8:30, you'll begin to exit the zone before dinner. A one-block snack is good for approximately 2 to 3 hours. You are far better off having a one-block snack at 6:30 to keep you in the zone until dinner time, even if you increase the number of total protein blocks that you consume during the day. If you don't have a snack and simply hope for the best at 8:30, you may have completely exited the zone and will tend to consume far more carbohydrates than you need, moving you even further away from your goal. 9. Your goal is to spend as many hours of the day as you can in the zone. If you make a mistake, remember you're only 4 to 6 hours away from re-entering the zone. This makes the program guilt-free because you realize you're only one zone meal or snack away from getting back on track. This is why the late-night snack is so important. Regardless of what happened during the day, your late-night snack will not only nudge you back into the zone while you sleep, but will literally reset your biochemistry for the next morning. 10. During the first 2 weeks on the zone program, try to eat only favorable carbohydrates, fruits and vegetables. At the end of the first 2 weeks, reintroduce some of the unfavorable carbohydrates, grains, starches, bread, and pasta, if you desire. It doesn't mean you can't ever eat unfavorable carbohydrates, but they must be consumed in smaller amounts because they are so carbohydrate dense. If you begin to reintroduce grains and starches and notice a decrease in performance, mental acuity, and appetite suppression, this is a pretty good indicator that you are very carbohydrate sensitive. Grains and starches should never be your primary carbohydrate source at a meal, and ideally, never more than 25% of your total carbohydrate content at a meal. It will be the balance of favorable and unfavorable carbohydrates that determines what volume of carbohydrates can be eaten with the amount of protein you plan to consume at the same meal. 11. Your primary concern is to maintain the desired 4 to 6 hour response regardless of the carbohydrate source. If you're not hungry prior to a meal and then find yourself craving sugars and sweets 2 hours after a meal, you probably consumed too many carbohydrates or the wrong type of carbohydrate during your last meal. 12. Try to develop a hormonally winning cookbook. Every time you make a meal that leaves you satiated with a good mental focus for the next 4 to 6 hours, write it down. Most people will eat only 20 food items in their entire life and eat only 10 meals repetitively. Take those 20 food items you like to eat to construct an infinite number of hormonally winning zone meals. Change the effect on your hormonal carburetor of each of your 10 favorite meals into hormonal winners. For your favorite recipes like Aunt Millie's succotash, just keep tweaking the composition of that meal until you reach the zone using your own personal response. Now you have Aunt Millie's hormonally correct succotash. Number 13. Eat your protein portion first. Since protein stimulates glucagon, this hormone will cause the release of the stored carbohydrate in the liver to keep your brain satisfied, therefore making it easier to control the carbohydrate intake. Furthermore, glucagon depresses insulin secretion, making protein your most powerful tool in controlling insulin levels. 14. Drink an 8-ounce glass of water about 30 minutes before a meal or snack. This not only decreases your hunger, but is a good way to get the necessary water you need on the zone diet. Remember, on a fat-burning diet, you will need nearly 50% more water than you will have needed on a high-carbohydrate diet. This means at least 8 8-ounce glasses of water or other suitable beverages per day. 15. Chew your food thoroughly before swallowing. An integral part of the overall digestive process begins in your mouth with the secretion of enzymes in the saliva. Remember, it's not the amount of food you eat, but the amount that is absorbed. As you age, your digestive capacity will decrease. Therefore, make use of what you have. Furthermore, by chewing slowly, you're giving the macronutrients time to get into the bloodstream to begin generating some of those hormonal stop-eating signals. Number 16. Sit down to eat your meal. You're more likely to eat less rapidly, and you might actually engage in some conversation, which allows even more time for the food to enter the bloodstream and more time for those hormonal stop-eating signals to be sent to the brain. It's a war out there. In fact, every time you enter the supermarket, consider it a war zone. It's you versus the food industry, and it's not fair. The food manufacturers have marketing and packaging. You don't. They have advertising. You don't. The only thing you have in your favor is knowledge. Put that knowledge to work, and you can win the battle. First things first, before you go off to battle, make sure you're prepared by eating a zone snack before you shop. When you get to the store, follow this ideal battle plan. Try to stay on the periphery of the supermarket and never go down the aisles. Once you venture within, it's like a scene from Moby Dick, where Ahab beckons you to come after neatly packaged carbohydrates and take them home to eat. Although Ahab's crew was powerless to prevent their doom, you don't have to be. For once, the government is finally on your side in this battle of wits. Those nutritional labels that once seemed so meaningless give you the information you need to finally make intelligent choices in the trenches. Let's take a close look at what is commonly seen as another government make-work intervention in your life, the nutrition panel label. When people look at the nutrition panel label, they see only one thing, the dreaded grams of fat. You know that fat is not your enemy. In fact, it may be your greatest ally in getting into the zone. Within the borders of that label lie the real information that's going to allow you to win this war. And what is that information? The ratio of protein to carbohydrate in that food product. That's right, every packaged food in America contains the real information you need to win the zone war. For every 3 grams of protein, you want about 4 grams of carbohydrate. Let's be frank, it is highly unlikely that you will ever find a single food product in those aisles that has the right protein to carbohydrate ratio. But the secret is to mix and match foods until you get the right combination. If you're going to do this mixing and matching within the confines of the supermarket, you have to go back to blocks. Simply convert every label into blocks. Divide the number of protein grams per serving by 7 and the number of carbohydrate grams per serving by 9. And you can quickly tell what kind of foods you'll need to buy to keep a precise balance in your hormonal carburetor. For example, let's read the label on one of the first convenience foods introduced into America, grape nuts. What could be more all-American than grape nuts? I know this all too well. As a young high school athlete, I lived on grape nuts. Grape nuts for breakfast, grape nuts for after-school snacks, grape nuts for dinner, grape nuts for a late-night snack. I didn't particularly like vegetables or low-fat protein. But what was I really eating? Sugar, and lots of it. A 1/2 cup serving of grape nuts has 6 grams of protein and 47 grams of carbohydrate. But since it also has 5 grams of fiber, the total content of insulin-promoting carbohydrate is only 42 grams. Of course, no one ever eats only 1 ounce of grape nuts. More likely about 4 ounces, since that is what it takes to fill a typical bowl. Nonetheless, if I'd eaten only 1 ounce or 4 ounces, the protein-to-carbohydrate ratio, and hence the effect on my hormonal carburetor, would have been the same. Let's assume I eat my typical 4-ounce serving. In that serving, I should be getting 12 grams of protein. But because of the fiber content, I will actually absorb less than that listed amount of protein. Let's assume that only 75% is absorbed, which is typical of most non-animal protein sources. This means in a 4-ounce serving, I would actually be getting 9 grams of protein. Take that 9 grams of protein divided by 84 grams of carbohydrate gives a protein-to-carbohydrate ratio of 0.11. Since you are trying to get 3 grams of protein for every 4 grams of carbohydrate, which gives a protein-to-carbohydrate ratio of 0.75, eating a bowl of grape nuts will definitely not be in the zone. In fact, the protein-to-carbohydrate ratio of grape nuts is actually very similar to that of a typical candy bar. Even adding a little milk to it would not greatly change the ratio. No wonder I never made it to the NBA. But a far better way to calculate is to break the grape nuts in the blocks. So let's look at the typical 4-ounce bowl of grape nuts in terms of blocks. 9 grams of protein is a little more than 1 protein block. 84 grams of carbohydrate is approximately 9 blocks of carbohydrate. What's wrong with this picture? First, the ratio of protein to carbohydrate blocks is nowhere near the 1-to-1 ratio needed for your hormonal carburetor. Second, you're consuming far more carbohydrate blocks than even the largest person would ever want in a meal. Third, there are no fat blocks. Summation, a hormonal disaster, but a correctable hormonal disaster. Simply eat less grape nuts, like 1 ounce, which will give you 3 carbohydrate blocks, with a little low-fat milk, add another 3 blocks of low-fat protein, like 3/4 of a cup of non-fat cottage cheese, and 3 blocks of fat using 3 macadamia nuts. Now you have the makings of a hormonal winner. Of course, an even better choice would have been to replace the grape nuts completely with 1 cup of strawberries and an orange. Let's try looking at 5 ounces of a typical can of tuna fish. Each serving contains 12 grams of protein, 5 grams of fat, and 0 grams of carbohydrate. So we have 2 blocks of protein per serving, and 3 blocks of internal fat, and 0 carbohydrate. And here's an example of hidden fat found in all low-fat protein sources. Every block of low-fat protein will contain about 1 block of fat. That internal fat is not quite enough to optimize your hormonal carburetor. To do so, you should add 1 additional external block of fat for every block of low-fat protein. Now, if you add up the internal fat in the low-fat protein and the external fat you plan to add, you will get the appropriate balance of protein, carbohydrate, and fat. However, nobody eats a half a can of tuna. So let's try and decipher the label of the whole can to see that each can contains about 3 servings. So a whole can of tuna fish would contain 6 protein blocks and no carbohydrate. Obviously, if you're going to have a can of tuna for a meal, then you better find 6 carbohydrate blocks to add to it and add another 6 external fat blocks. That could be 2 slices of bread and 1 apple with 1 tablespoon of mayonnaise. That's a pretty big sandwich, but when cut in half, it becomes 2 3-block meals. Or your choice might be a massive salad containing 1 head of lettuce, 3 tomatoes, 2 onions, and 3 green peppers with 6 tablespoons of olive oil and vinegar dressing. Again, splitting the salad into 2 portions will also give you 2 3-block meals. If that seems too much, then reduce the size of the salad and half a piece of fruit. The choice is yours as long as you maintain your hormonal carburetor. And what about high-fat foods such as peanuts? Most people think of peanuts as a high-protein food because they are taught that peanut butter is a great source of protein for young kids. In reality, both peanuts and peanut butter are great sources of fat with little protein and carbohydrate thrown in. Let's look at the typical label for peanuts. First, unlike tuna fish, I hope you're not going to eat the entire jar, since 1 serving of peanuts is about 1 ounce or about 15 individual nuts. In those 15 nuts, you're going to have 11 grams of fat, 6 grams of protein, and 7 grams of carbohydrate. Breaking this down into blocks would give you 9 fat blocks, 1 protein block, and 1 carbohydrate block. So while peanuts and other seeds and nuts have an appropriate protein-to-carbohydrate ratio, they are essentially all fat as far as the zone is concerned. But they can be used to add extra fat, and this is especially true of old-fashioned peanut butter, to other meals that are too low in fat in order to optimize your hormonal carburetor. Now that you are understanding how to break food down into blocks, let's take the next step and find a typical frozen dinner to see how it stacks up. Let's try the Weight Watchers Ravioli Florentine. The first thing you see is the meal is low fat with a total of 2 grams. In fact, on the back of the box, it says, "How can it be so low in fat and so delicious?" But 2 grams of fat is approximately 1 fat block. Go to the carbohydrate content. We have 43 grams. But bear in mind what is important is the insulin-promoting carbohydrate content. Since the meal has 4 grams of fiber, we should subtract this amount from the total of 43 grams of carbohydrate, leaving 39 grams of insulin-promoting carbohydrate. This translates into 4 carbohydrate blocks. So what about the protein? Well, it has only 9 grams of protein, which equals 1 block of protein. This ratio of 4 carbohydrate blocks for 1 protein block is just about the same as a Hershey's chocolate bar with almonds. No wonder it's so delicious. So before you eat this frozen dinner, how can you make it hormonally correct? First, it needs more protein. Since the frozen dinner contains 4 blocks of carbohydrates, we need to add another 3 blocks of protein to give it a total of 4 protein blocks. So go to your refrigerator and get 3 ounces of turkey breast or tuna fish to eat with this frozen dinner. But you're still not quite there. You need 3 more blocks of fat. And we're going to make this monounsaturated fat. The easiest way is to add 3 macadamia nuts or 3 teaspoons of slivered almonds. Now we have a hormonal winner, even though it started out as a hormonal loser. And the total calories with all this extra protein and fat 365. A hormonal winner that is also low calorie. It's a relatively fast meal that won't take you out of the zone. The best thing to do is to shop for fresh stuff and make it yourself. After all, who wants to eat frozen meals when they can enjoy family recipes handed down over generations? People eat maybe 10 favorite meals at home because they tend to like the same meals over and over again. So why not take each of these 10 family favorite meals and transform them into hormonal winners? Just like we did for the Weight Watchers ravioli Florentine, to be eaten and enjoyed again and again. Who actually eats in the zone? Surprisingly, the French and Northern Italians. Two cultures and cuisines noted for being incredibly refined and sophisticated. Think about the very posh 4-star French restaurant. For $50, you get a glass of great wine, a small amount of protein in the center of the plate, covered with a delicious sauce, surrounded by an artistically arranged outer ring of vegetables, and a small side salad to cleanse the palate. Even though you could have gobbled down 5 meals at the all-you-can-eat Pasta Palace for the same price you paid at the 4-star French restaurant, the French restaurant is serving you a zone meal. Adequate amounts of protein, low glycemic vegetables, and perhaps a glass of wine. And the 4-star Northern Italian restaurant? For the same $50, you now get a glass of wine, a piece of fish in the center of the plate, surrounded by an outer ring of artistically prepared vegetables, and a small side dish of pasta. Neither of these meals was more than 500 calories, and each had the appropriate balance of protein to carbohydrate. And no one can accuse you of not having a great meal. But how do you play the game when you're going out to the typical restaurant where a satisfied customer is one who has to unbuckle his belt after the meal? Here are some simple rules to follow at any restaurant, 4-star or family style. Rule number 1, never eat the rolls. If you're going to eat unfavorable carbohydrates, save them for dessert. Rule number 2, always choose your low-fat protein entree from the menu first before ordering anything else. This sets the stage for selecting the rest of your meal. Rule number 3, always ask your waiter to replace the rice, potatoes, or pasta with vegetables. You'll be amazed how gracious the restaurant will be. Rule number 4, while you're waiting for dinner, have a glass of wine or a glass of bottled water while everyone else is munching on rolls. Try conversation instead of eating to pass the time. Rule number 5. Once the dinner is served, use your eyeball method to survey the scene. Look at the size of the low-fat protein entree you had ordered. If it is significantly greater in size than the palm of your hand, plan to take the excess home. Then look at your plate and determine whether the carbohydrates are favorable or unfavorable. Rule number 6. The volume of the low-fat protein you plan to eat determines the volume of the carbohydrates you're also going to eat. If you're eating favorable carbohydrates, then you can have double the volume of the carbohydrates compared to your protein portion. If you're planning to eat unfavorable carbohydrates, then you can only eat the same volume of carbohydrates as in your protein portion. Rule number 7. If you really came to the restaurant to eat dessert, then don't eat any carbohydrates, favorable or unfavorable, at your meal. When the server comes back with a dessert menu, order whatever you want, but plan to eat only half of it. Remember, you've saved up your carbohydrate allotment, so now it's time to cash in. The rest of the dessert? Offer it to your dinner companions. I'm sure they'll be delighted to help you out. And the best dessert? Try fresh fruit. Now that wasn't too difficult. Very easy to do in a 4-star restaurant when there isn't very much food to begin with. More difficult to undertake in the typical American restaurant in which great masses of food are shoved in your direction. And this is what has happened to American restaurants in the last generation. Because we have the cheapest food on earth, people expect to get their money's worth by consuming massive amounts of calories. Everything is oversized. The only exceptions are the above-mentioned 4-star restaurants where presentation and quality count for more than sheer bulk. And since mass is in, you make your money as a restaurant owner by making sure most of the mass comes in the form of carbohydrates, which are dirt cheap, as opposed to protein, which is relatively expensive. It's also easy to order hormonally correct meals in fast food restaurants. Let's take McDonald's for example. Here's a very quick zone meal. Buy two of these inexpensive small hamburgers. Then throw one of the buns away. Put the two patties together on the remaining bun and enjoy. A little high in saturated fat and all unfavorable carbohydrates, but if you're not doing it very often, it's not too bad hormonally. Now here's a far better choice at McDonald's. Buy the grilled McChicken sandwich and a salad. Throw away 3/4 of the bun. Add the grilled chicken and 1/4 of the bun as croutons to the salad. And presto, you have a grilled chicken salad with a touch of bread. It's quick, it's easy, and it's hormonally correct. Fast food restaurants can be a great help to you when you don't have the time to cook or sit down at a restaurant. But the best quick meals can be found in your supermarket at the salad bar. Simply grab a bunch of pre-cut vegetables and fruits and put them in the aluminum plate they provide along with some olives as your monounsaturated fat. Then walk over to the deli and buy a 1/4 pound of low-fat protein like turkey, chicken, or tuna. Add the low-fat protein to your pre-cut vegetables and fruits and olives, and you've got a great hormonal meal. It may be a little expensive compared to a bagel and a cup of coffee, but isn't your health worth it? And what if you're constantly on the road? How do you stay in the zone? Here are some easy tricks for the business trip road warrior. If you're going to be staying a couple of nights at a hotel that has a room refrigerator, then go out and buy some fruit and sliced low-fat deli meat or low-fat cottage cheese. For every piece of fruit, plan to eat 1 ounce of low-fat meat or 2 ounces of cottage cheese. These can be quick snacks before you go out to eat, thereby making it easier to eat a zone meal at a restaurant. Before you go to bed, remember to have a quick hormonal touch-up so you can get a good night's sleep in a strange bed. Keep in mind that as a business person on the road, meals are your key to success because they are going to be the main determinant in your mental alertness throughout the day. Here are 3 more hormonal winners you can always choose. For breakfast, have a 3-egg omelet and try to have it made of egg substitutes or egg whites, and the fruit bowl, but don't eat the toast or the hash browns. For lunch, have a grilled chicken salad. For dinner, eat fish with an extra serving of vegetables instead of rice or potatoes. And of course, never eat the rolls. Life is tough enough on the road without having to wander out of the zone. Eating out in the zone is easy if you know the rules. If you think it's difficult, then think of carbohydrates as a drug. The more you take of any drug, the more likely you are to get a drug overdose. In this case, it's an excess production of insulin, which can eventually kill you. That thought should make it easier to pass on the rolls the next time around. The most important question a physician can ask a patient is, how do you feel? That's the same question you want to ask yourself on the zone diet. It's my basic rule, whether it applies to a prescription drug, a new diet, a vitamin, a mineral, an herb, etc., is to use it as directed for 2 weeks. If you don't feel significantly better, then it's probably not going to happen. The zone diet is no different. What results are you initially looking for? If you're like most people, you're after 3 simple things: thinking better, performing better, and looking better. How do you think better? Once you begin to stabilize your blood sugar levels, you can expect your thinking to become more clear and more focused. Think of what happens when you eat a big pasta meal at noon. By 3 o'clock, you can barely keep your eyes open. The worst nightmare for a business executive is to try to negotiate a big business deal in the afternoon after eating a huge pasta lunch. If you want the world's greatest productivity tool, think about following the zone diet. Next, you should be performing better. When you're in the zone, you're essentially having a hormonal ATM card to tap into your body's stored fat, a virtually unlimited source of energy. So you should have more energy to spare for work, at home, and play. And finally, you'll be looking better. You don't lose weight rapidly on the zone diet, but you do lose excess body fat at near a genetic maximum, which is about 1 to 1.5 pounds of fat per week. At the end of 2 weeks, your clothes, especially around your waist, will fit much better. Even if you're having great success on the zone diet, every 30 days, I strongly recommend you eat a big carbohydrate-rich meal like pasta. Why would you want to descend into carbohydrate hell? Just to let yourself know the difference between being in the zone versus being out of it, even for one meal. What can you expect after eating that high carbohydrate meal? An insulin hangover with a loss of mental focus after the meal, grogginess, and trouble waking up the next morning, puffiness in your hands and feet. It's a very instructive lesson on the hormonal power of food. And what about meals? How do you know if you're making a hormonally winning meal? Well, you could do a radioimmune assay on your blood insulin levels every 2 hours, but that's pretty unrealistic. Or you could take a blood sugar test every 2 hours. Again, pretty unlikely. The easiest test is just to ask yourself, how do you feel during the next 4 to 6 hours after a meal? If you maintain a sharp mental focus and have no hunger for that 4 to 6 hour period, then you know that meal was a hormonal winner. Put that exact meal in terms of ingredients and amounts in your winner's cookbook, so you can always come back to it at any time in the future, and like using any drug, induce the same hormonal response. Try to make your hormonal cookbook as large as possible. For most people, that cookbook need only consist of about 10 meals. Why? Well, as I said before, most people really don't eat that many different meals at home. Of course, if you're like my wife and I, you probably have a million cookbooks as a result of joining some cookbook club years ago. But you still eat the same few meals you like to eat again and again. If each of those meals is a hormonal winner, it's the same thing as taking the most powerful drug known in order to think better, perform better, and look better. Most people would pay ungodly sums of money for such a drug, yet it exists right in your recipe file of hormonally winning meals. Feeling better, thinking better, performing better, and looking better are indicators that you're in the zone. But in this age of technology, most people want some hard numbers to confirm that they're feeling better. What can you do on your own to confirm the beneficial physiological changes that are indeed happening? The first thing would be to track down your change in your percent body fat. You know your clothes are fitting better, but the weight on the scale isn't changing all that quickly. The reason you look at the scale at all is for a number that confirms the better fit of your clothes. Your weight, however, isn't nearly as important as your percent body fat in analyzing your overall health. So recalculate your percent body fat to confirm that your clothes are really fitting better. Bear in mind that everything is relative to your starting point. And as you lower your percent body fat, know that you are lowering your insulin levels too. As you lower your insulin levels, it is much more likely you're going to stay in the center of the zone. But what if you still want more numbers? Well, this means getting a blood test. Most people, including myself, hate seeing their blood leave their bodies. But when you know you're feeling better, you want every test in the book to confirm it. Most people dread going to a doctor's office to take a blood test because they know they're there because they're sick, and they know the test is only going to confirm how sick they really are. Not surprisingly, when you're feeling great, you want to march in and demand as many tests as possible to congratulate yourself. If you only knew which test. One of the best is your blood pressure. No needles, no blood. It turns out blood pressure is very sensitive to hyperinsulinemia. When you're done checking your blood pressure, have your physician take a blood sample and tell him or her you want the following test: fasting triglycerides, HDL cholesterol, the ratio of fasting triglycerides to HDL cholesterol, fasting insulin, and glycosylated hemoglobin. These are all standard tests, but the last two are not routinely done because they tend to be slightly more expensive. And what results are you looking for? Your fasting triglycerides should be under 100 milligrams per deciliter, and your HDL cholesterol should be greater than 50 milligrams per deciliter. This means your triglyceride to HDL ratio should be 2 or less. Your fasting insulin should be less than 10 microunits per ml, and the glycosylated hemoglobin should be less than 5%. These are your goals. It may take a little time to reach them, but if you're thinking better, performing better, and looking better as you progress toward them, you can afford the time. Why are these numbers important? Because they indicate the extent of any hyperinsulinemia and therefore your likelihood of moving out of the zone and toward chronic disease. If your triglycerides are greater than 200 milligrams per deciliter and your HDL cholesterol is less than 35 milligrams per deciliter, you're headed for big trouble because you're hyperinsulinemic. Likewise, a fasting insulin greater than 15 microunits per ml means you're in danger because you're hyperinsulinemic. And a glycosylating hemoglobin of greater than 9% means you're at high risk because you're hyperinsulinemic. Why do these numbers place you in such clinical trouble? It turns out the primary risk factor that determines your likelihood to develop heart disease is not high cholesterol nor high blood pressure, but elevated insulin levels. If you're hyperinsulinemic, you'll be making more of a certain group of hormones that can actually make you ill. Why doesn't medical science just find some drug that lowers insulin? Actually, such a drug exists. It's called food. If you're hyperinsulinemic, then start using that drug. Your life depends on it. There's more to living in the zone than simply eating. You really want to do everything you can to keep your insulin levels from rising. What you eat and how you eat will have the greatest impact on getting to the zone. But there are two other ways you can enhance your diet to get to the zone and stay there on a permanent basis. Not surprisingly, just like eating, you can do these things yourself. These magical hormonal elixirs are called exercise and stress reduction. Before you go off and join some gym or find an appropriate guru in India, let me give you some very simple ways to integrate these two hormonal control strategies into your daily life. Exercise. Just do it. The very word inspires dread for most people. Not because you don't think it's important, you don't have the time to do it. There are two types of exercise you should do every day, aerobic and anaerobic. Aerobic exercise simply means doing exercise that requires oxygen. The best exercise for most people is walking. Simply walk 15 minutes in one direction, then turn around and walk back. You can do this in the morning, at lunch, after dinner. Just plan to do it once a day. You can even park your car a 15-minute walk from work, walk to your job, then walk back to your car after work. You don't need to join a health club, buy a designer spandex exercise outfit, or invest in a pair of high-tech running shoes. That isn't to say there aren't benefits to more intensive aerobic exercise, but make this daily walking an integral part of your life before you decide to increase your level of activity. As example, I have never yet figured out the logic of having valet parking at posh health clubs in California. Why not just park the car down the street and walk to the club? What about anaerobic exercise? Isn't that weightlifting? And does this mean joining some dark and dingy gym surrounded by hulking figures that come out of central casting? No. In fact, all the weight training you'll probably ever need can be done in your bedroom, or for that matter, any hotel room if you're on the road. All it takes is about 5 minutes a day. The weight you're going to use is your own body, and you carry that piece of equipment with you wherever you go. You should work your upper and lower body muscles at every workout, and you can do this with two very simple exercises, push-ups and squats. Let's start with push-ups first. Many people, especially women, will have trouble doing a push-up at first, especially if they're out of shape. The key to all of these upper body exercises is always keep your back straight. Correct form is always more important than the number of repetitions. If you're really in bad shape, initially just lean toward a wall and push yourself away. These are really pushaways, not push-ups. When you can easily do 3 sets of 10 to 15 of these pushaways, then you're ready to progress to the next level, which are counter pushes. Find a counter and stand 2 to 3 feet away from it. With your hands on the counter, lower your body toward the counter, then push yourself away. After you can do 3 sets of 10 to 15 of these counter pushes, you're ready for knee push-ups. With your knees on the floor, place your hands on the floor shoulder width and push yourself up with your knees still touching the floor. After you can easily do 3 sets of these knee push-ups 10 to 15 times, you're finally ready for the traditional push-up. These are just like the knee push-ups, except now all your weight rests upon your hands and your toes. Lower yourself until you're about 1 inch from the ground, then raise yourself back up. Your goal is to do 3 sets of 10 to 15 of these traditional push-ups on a daily basis. Push-ups are great for the upper body, but what about the lower body? For that, you want to do squats. Squats are deceptive because they require a lot of lower body strength. But like push-ups, it's always best to start slowly and always keep your back straight. Begin using a chair with arms. Sit down and then stand up. If you initially have to use some of the arms or the chair for support, that's okay. Do 3 sets of this 10 to 15 times continuously. Your next progression is to do the same exercise without using the arms of the chair for support. The next step is to cross your arms across your chest and still be able to do 3 sets of 10 to 15 repetitions. Once you can do that, you're in position to begin to do a squat, which is essentially sitting down on a chair that isn't there. Don't let your knees bend more than 90 degrees, and at first, do these squats with your arms extended. Once you can reach that goal of 3 sets of 10 to 15 repetitions, then do the same exercise with your arms crossed on your chest. So here's your daily exercise routine. Do 1 set of push-ups at whatever level you can, followed by 1 set of squats at whatever level you can. Rest 1 minute, then repeat both exercises again. Rest another minute, and do both push-ups and squats a third time. When you can easily do 15 repetitions on the third and last set, then go to the next level of difficulty the following day. The total time of your daily anaerobic exercise is 5 minutes a day in the privacy of your own home or in a hotel room if you're traveling. Just do it every day. If you're walking 30 minutes a day and doing 5 minutes a day of strength training, you've got a pretty good exercise program. And you'll be surprised how many people will still complain about the time it takes to do even this level of exercise. But if you really want to get into the zone, this small expenditure of time and effort is certainly worth it. Even if you've reached this level of exercise, before you join a health club, I would first recommend that you just buy a set of light barbells weighing between 1 and 15 pounds, or use old plastic milk bottles partially filled with water to do additional strength exercises in addition to your standard push-ups and squats. These now become great warm-ups. Any number of exercise books will describe more advanced barbell exercises for both the lower and upper body. The key point is that you should never let more than 1 minute go by between sets, and try not to go beyond 30 minutes of exercise with weights. Beyond that point, hormonal levels begin to significantly change, and you can gain very little additional benefit with increased training. And if you want more aerobic activity, walk 1 hour per day. Stress is a biochemical event that causes significant hormonal responses. The acute stress brought on by danger causes the release of hormones, such as adrenaline, which mobilize you for the typical flight or fight syndrome associated with acute stress. However, what is more common in our present society is chronic stress, which also has hormonal consequences. During chronic stress, the hormone cortisol is being released at an elevated level. As cortisol levels rise, insulin resistance increases, which in turn causes insulin levels to rise. It's these rising insulin levels that drive you out of the zone. The so-called type A personality, aggressive, hard-charging, driven, is the type of individual with increased cortisol levels. And since cardiovascular disease is associated with such type A personalities, it is not surprising that stress reduction can play an important role in reducing heart attack. Probably the best stress reducer is walking, not power walks where you're trying to pump up your heart rate, but the types of walks that let you stop and talk to neighbors, or enjoy the scenery, or even smell the roses. In each of these cases, there's a lot of stopping and starting. But since you have no particular agenda, it's a great stress reducer. Furthermore, walking is a 2-in-1 activity. Besides reducing stress, you're also reducing insulin by exercising aerobically. And insulin reduction is what it's all about. So there you have it. Diet, exercise, and stress reduction. 3 low-tech ways to treat a high-tech problem, hyperinsulinemia. These are the things you can begin tomorrow to start your journey toward the zone. Not only will these steps get you to the zone, but they will allow you to live there continually. You should be aware that there are a number of drugs that can take you out of the zone by raising insulin levels. Two of the most common are diuretics and beta blockers, both commonly used in the treatment of high blood pressure. Newer hypertensive drugs, such as angiotensin-converting enzyme inhibitors, have no effect on insulin levels. Likewise, corticosteroids, such as prednisone, also significantly raise insulin levels. Then there's another drug that only slightly elevates insulin levels. Unfortunately, that drug is ubiquitous in America. It's called caffeine. Frequently asked questions about the zone. If I follow the zone diet, does this mean I can never have rice, pasta, or